On this episode of Tips from the Top Floor, we'll go back to the Arctic. Kevin got a 13-year-old camera as a gift and Matt is torn between the 50 and the 35. This is Tips on the Top Floor, episode 825 for Thursday, May the 31st, 2018.
Tips from the top. From the top floor. Tips from the top. All right. From the top floor.
Hey, how are you doing? This is Chris Marquardt. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, the longest running photography podcast on the planet. Okie dokie. So, Q&A session today. But first, let me talk about something that is going on here right now. And I'm a bit late this year. Normally, I have my photo tours for the next year online early in the year before. And the reason I do this is because it just makes it easier for everyone to plan. It makes it easier for if someone wants to save up for a tour. This year, I'm a bit late, I know, but I'm just in the process of getting the new 2019 photo tours online. And you're the first ones to find out here on the show about some of them. So in this episode and in the following episodes, next few, I will just go through the plans that I have one tour at a time. So I don't want to overwhelm you, but I'm so excited about these the tours that are coming up for 2019. And again, still planning on some, but we're pretty close to getting most of them online. Are two Arctic tours in February, Northern Norway from On a Beautiful Ship. That's the one I'll tell you about today. It's already online. Probably Italy in looking at late April, I think, including Tuscany. That's very exciting. Probably the Czech Republic, Bohemia. Including Prague and Bohemian Castles, and we're looking at putting that on in May. And okay, so here's one that's a bit unusual, but I've been looking at that for the longest time, and I think I'll have an opportunity to do that in June. I'm talking about Kyrgyzstan, which is probably the one I'm personally looking forward to the most because it's a very unusual one. But Kyrgyzstan is this mountainous region that is just, they're just so relaxed there. I will link to a YouTube video for you to see what Kyrgyzstan is like. I'm looking forward to that a lot. I'm also planning for Greenland in September. And then the fall colors in Romania in October, that is already online right now. I haven't opened the booking just yet, but it'll be open maybe when this show is out. Romania, that's Transylvania. Think castles and think a place where some people still live like they used to hundreds of years ago, like the Amish, you know. So one tour in each episode. Let's start with February next year in 2019. I will go back to the Arctic, to 68 degrees north on a ship. And it's a pretty exclusive ship. We're only photographers on the ship. We're not sharing that ship with any non-photographers. Well, if you want to bring a non-photographer, that is perfectly fine. But it's just photographers. It's a dedicated photo tour. Not just that. We have planned for two expeditions on that ship back to back because I believe those might go fast. They're both in the second half of February, both 8 days long. That's 7 nights on the ship. And the ship is the MS Togo. And I think it's named not after the African country, but after the name of a husky of some famous race that I don't really know about. So the MS Togo, it was built in 1965 at the Dunstan Shipyard in Thorne in Yorkshire and was used until 1997 as a high sea trawler. And then 2002, it was converted into a private yacht and has just been expanded to be an exquisite expedition ship. And it's a ship in a very classic style. It's really cozy. It holds 12 guests and 5 crew. It has cozy two-bed cabins with two like separate beds, not bunks. And these cabins are equipped with very nice ensuite bathrooms. So I think one of the cabins has a double bed and there are two single cabins too that share a bathroom. So I'm very cozy, very cozy. We'll all sail from Tromsø, which is up in northern Norway. It's above the Arctic Circle, and in itself, it's beautiful because it's situated in the middle of the Norwegian fjords, and when you fly in, the approach is spectacularly beautiful. And then from Tromsø, we'll sail down to Lofoten, which, if you followed me for any time, you know it's one of my favorite places here in Northern Europe. I'll go there again this year in September, but we'll explore Lofoten from the land, which is, by the way, almost sold out. I think one or two spots open, so if you prefer to experience Lofoten from land, you better sign up quickly. But this one in February next year, in February 2019, is mid-end of February, and we'll experience Lofoten from the sea. And it's a different approach. I'm really looking forward to that. The Arctic fjord landscapes from the sea are just amazing. There's a really good chance for northern lights. There's a good chance to see seals, white-tailed eagles. We'll even possibly see some whales. And we'll, of course, go on shore as often as possible. Or we will stop in small fishing villages in Lofoten. There are lots of them. And then the size of the ship, I think, is pretty much at the sweet spot. It's a small group, so it's not like a huge cruise ship. No, it's not. But it's still big enough to be quite comfortable. And again, there are single and double cabins. And because of its size and the shallow draft, the ship can go places that others can't. So it's ideal for this kind of an expedition. It'll give us a lot of freedom to move around. And yeah, I'll be on board as the man in charge of photography and of teaching photography. And there's not a real limit on what expertise you have to have. So this is a tour that's open for newbies as well as seasoned photographers. We'll make sure to have plenty of excellent photo ops there. And having been on Lofoten several times, I'm quite familiar with the area, so I know where to go. And we'll also have an expedition leader with us. I don't know just yet who that will be, but often it's someone who has a scientific background, like Mario Acquarone, who you might have listened to on our Curiously Polar podcast, which he might be the one, he might not. There's still planning going on. But yeah, expedition leaders will just often add additional information and lectures while we're at sea and in the fjords. But here's the kicker. Here's the major kicker. Tours like these, with like such a small group, with such an exclusive kind of thing, they will often clock in at 3,000 to 4,000 euros. We managed to get this down to a starting price of under 2,800 euros. Yep, you heard right. 2,800 euros. And depends on your choice of cabin, but that's kind of the entry price. And that includes, here's this is the double kicker, this includes a direct flight from Frankfurt Airport. So you won't even have to figure out how to get to Norway. We'll handle that for you. All you'll have to do is be at Frankfurt Airport at the right time, which is super easy to reach because Frankfurt is the biggest airport in Europe and you can get there from anywhere in the world. And we'll take it from there. And that's included in the price. So no trying to figure out on Norwegian websites which place to go. So as I said, I expect both of those tours to go fast. I'm really happy that I'll have the chance to explore Lofoten from a different angle, which this time, and the group size is also just perfect. Again, one photo instructor, one expedition leader for 12 guests. It's just an amazing ratio and a ton of fun. One thing I completely forgot to mention is the light. Lofoten in late February, while it's in the Arctic, the polar night is long over at that time. It ends in January. Even better, the sun will be above the horizon over eight hours each day. I think towards the end of February, it's even in the 9 hours. And it will be low all day long. So you'll pretty much have an almost perpetual sunset while you're there. It's just, for these kind of landscapes, it's just the most amazing light. And Yeah, you won't have to rush in the morning or in the evening. It's just that light will be there all day long for you to take advantage of. And the sun also doesn't go too low under the horizon, so you will have the just amazing blue hours, amazing golden hour. The golden hour is pretty much a golden day. So again, check it out. This will go fast. The links to both of those expeditions, one starts mid of February 2019, one starts a week later. Links are in the description, in the show notes, and I hope to meet many of you next year in February. Hey, while we're here, let me take a quick moment and thank this week's sponsor, Udemy. Udemy is the largest marketplace for online learning. Whether you want to learn something new or just sharpen your skills, Udemy has an extensive library of over 65,000 courses taught by expert instructors. Ever find yourself looking at a photo thinking, I wish I could do that? Well, with Udemy you can. From Japanese cooking courses to business classes to photography, Udemy has something for everyone. While other online learning companies charge hundreds of dollars per class, Udemy courses start at just $11.99. Plus, each course comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee for risk-free learning. Every day, students around the world choose Udemy to discover new passions, expand their skills, and even change careers. Improve your life through learning. Download the Udemy app to learn anytime, anywhere, or visit www.ude.my/topfloor today. That's www.ude.my/topfloor. And I thank them so much for the support. Before we go into the Q&A, did any one of you guys notice a change? The Easter egg that I placed in last week's episode of Tips on the Top Floor in 824? Did no one notice? At least I didn't get any feedback, but I have started, and I hope I'll be able to continue doing that, but it's not too hard to do, so at least with the tool chain that I have, I've started to put chapter marks in the podcast. So trying to kind of maybe be a bit more conscious about your, like, if there's a topic I talk about and you just are not that interested in it, yeah, that's a way for you to skip something or to find something quickly and go to, if you're interested in me talking about XYZ, then just tap in your podcast client, as long as it supports chapter marks, tap in your podcast client on the chapter function and just skip to that chapter right away. And yeah, let me know if you like this. Let me know if that's something you appreciate. I know that it's interesting. There's a really interesting dynamic. European listeners, especially German listeners, are really adamant about their chapter marks. They love their chapter marks. They love everything to be like tidy in order, very German. And I don't know many American podcasts that do chapter marks, but I know of those who started doing it, they get a lot of great feedback from their audience. So I will not do this retroactively. So the older episodes prior to 824 will not get chapter marks. This would be too complicated to do. But from now on, I'm planning to keep the chapter marks, or to add the chapter marks, and yeah, make it easier for you to find your way around Tips from the Top Floor. Let me know what you think. Let me know on social media, on different other channels via email, and so on. Maybe send me a voicemail about it, voice@tfttf.com. That's where you can leave your questions and, of course, also feedback about the new TFTTF chapter marks. So let's dive right into the Q&A.
Hi, Chris. My name's Kevin. I'm a new listener of the podcast, and I'm someone who's very new to photography. I started about a month ago, as my dad bought a new camera and gave me his old one. This old camera is an Olympus E500. It was made in 2005, I believe. I see a lot of new cameras have all kinds of new features and things that I probably won't be using because I am very new to photography. But will I see a big noticeable change in sharpness or image clarity using an older camera compared to newer ones? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin. I think you're on the right track. That's exactly the right questions to ask. Will those new bells and whistles on those new cameras be the thing that makes my photography better? And to be honest, no, they won't. Even sharpness and clarity, I've seen amazing photos from cameras from before 2005, and the Olympus E500 is from 2005. It's in the light, it's in the composition. Often sharpness and the perception of sharpness comes from the light in a shot much more than from the actual hardware, lenses and sensors and so on. So question is, will I see, that's your main question, will I see a big noticeable change in sharpness or image clarity? And the answer is, yes, you might, probably in some certain situations, but no, that's not a reason to upgrade just yet. And first, let me just say, getting a camera from your dad, hey, I couldn't imagine any better gift to give someone's creativity a boost. So kudos to your dad, that's awesome. So let me try to break down the main differences between older and more modern cameras. And let's look at the E500. It's a DSLR. It's a digital single lens reflex camera, which means it has a reflex mirror. This like this 35 degree mirror, and then it has a penta prism. Or this one actually has a penta mirror, but it doesn't matter. That's the hump on the top of the camera. And what that does is it mirrors the picture from the lens directly into your eye. So you're looking through the lens, and when you look into the eyepiece, and it's an optical path, and that has advantages and it has disadvantages. The advantages are you see things in real time, not on a screen, and some photographers, including myself, we like that. Now there's this other camp that is more in the optical viewfinder is a disadvantage kind of camp, because of course cameras with EVs, with electronic viewfinders, have it easier to add additional information in the viewfinders, and you'll have an approach that is a bit closer to what you see is what you get, the WYSIWYG approach. Whereas with a DSLR, unless you use live view, you'll have to kind of learn and get experience to get the shots straight from camera that you want. Well, the camera is trying to help you there, but we all know that you have a lot of control over what these cameras do, and if you use it right, then you get better pictures. Interesting technical tidbit, the E500, I think, was one of the first cameras who had a dust reduction system built in. So it's got this little ultrasonic thing, piezo shaker on the sensor or on the filters in front of the sensor to shake off the dust. I'm not sure any other cameras had that at that time. The megapixels. I think we'll have to talk about the megapixels for a second. The Olympus has 8 megapixels. Cameras today are more around 20 megapixels. Some go up to 50, but like the middle of the field kind of cameras, 20 megapixels is kind of normal. And it just means that you can make bigger prints with today's cameras before you start seeing unsharpness, before you start seeing pixelation. But you'd be surprised how big you can print with 8 megapixels. And it's not something that would that would keep me from using that, even in a professional context. Again, it's more about light and composition. And 8 megapixels, if you use them well, you'll be just fine. Especially if you use photos online most of the time, 8 megapixels is plenty. The sensor size, the E500 has a 4/3 sensor, which is a quite decent sensor size. Today, the 4/3 system has been kind of replaced with a mirrorless Micro 4/3 system. Micro 4/3 is different, but it has the same sensor size, but it doesn't have a mirror anymore. So modern 4/3 sensors are in mirrorless cameras. But again, same sensor size, so not much difference there. The E500 offers a pretty generous ISO 3200 as its upper boundary. So the sensitivity can be cranked up quite a bit. But I would expect the low light performance to not be on par with today's cameras. Daytime photos will never be a problem. As soon as you start shooting in the dark, an older sensor might have a bit more noise in the picture. Is that a problem? Depends on your style and taste. For the beginning, I wouldn't really worry about that. And I typically don't. If I need to, decide between cranking up the ISO or exposing longer, I will crank up the ISO because camera shake is just impossible or nearly impossible to remove from a photo well. But noise, we can often deal with in post-processing. Okay, here's one area that might be become a problem, and that's the speed of the processor that's built in. Because, you know, today's cameras are just faster in operation. Processors have become so much faster. So the saving of the photos onto the memory card is faster. Going through the menus and finding settings is probably faster. Flipping through your images is going to be faster with a modern camera. So if you're not the patient kind, that might go on your nerves. But other than that, again, don't worry about that too much. The biggest advantage you have with an 8-megapixel camera is that the photos are just, they're tiny in file sizes, you know? They're easy to handle for virtually any computer today. Even your phone will have no problems whatsoever. There are smartphones out there that have higher resolution than that camera. They're 12-megapixel smartphones or even higher. So you'll be zipping through the photo editing in no time. But just one general note. Feature-wise, in terms of the basic photography features, it can do exactly what any other camera can do. You can change the shutter speed, you can change the aperture, and you can adjust the ISO. And honestly, and it shows RAW, by the way, and honestly, that's all you need to take great photos. The rest is bells and whistles. So my conclusion, Kevin, keep that camera, use it, learn with it. It's a great learning tool. It's a great tool to do great photography. Get familiar with what those shutter speed and aperture and ISO do to your photos. At one point, you might be getting off the automatic modes and take over a bit more control. And over time, you'll find the boundaries of that camera yourself. And then that's the time to upgrade.
This is Matt from Tennessee. Been a long time listener and have a question for you. I'm going on vacation in December. I use a Nikon D90 and I only want to take one prime lens with me. And I know there's a huge debate over 35 or 50 millimeter. And I was just curious what your thoughts on it and what your preference was. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Thanks, Matt. Okay, 35 versus 50 millimeters. Well, they are kind of in the same ballpark. I mean, those focal lengths go from 10 millimeters up to 3,000 millimeters. So the difference between 35 and 50 isn't huge, but there is a difference. And I think it's important to understand that focal length always depends on the sensor size. So focal length, the actual focal length stays the same. If you put the 50 millimeter lens on a full frame camera or on a crop camera, it's the same lens. It's the same depth of field. It's the angle of view that changes. That's the major change when you put those on different sensor sizes. Angle of view, well, that's just how much you see in the photo. Now, let's look at four different cases. Let's compare the 50 millimeter lens on both a full frame and then on a crop camera. 50 millimeter on full frame, that's what we call the normal focal length, because it shows the proportions of sizes of things as they go into the distance, similar to how our eyes see them. It's different at different focal lengths, but the 50 millimeter gives us the same kind of proportions. Doesn't give us the same angle of view of our eyes. That's much, much larger. But it gives us the proportions similar to what we see. The 35 on a full screen. That was 50 on a full screen. The 35 on a full frame, is a wide angle. It's the beginning of wide angle. It begins to kind of exaggerate the proportions of distances in the picture. So you'll have this... slight wide angle, and you go back to someone like Cartier-Bresson. He didn't like the 35 because it was too wide angle for him. Nowadays, with photos with fish eyes and 12 millimeters and stuff. That's a bit of a different thing. People are probably getting more used to the look of these, but 35 is at least a slight wide angle. Now, we'll look at your camera, which is a crop camera. It has a crop sensor, so the sensor is not full frame. And now we'll look at the 50 versus the 35 on that sensor. And if you look at the 50 on your crop sensor, it acts as a light telephoto lens. Like, it's more in the 80 millimeter range in terms of the angle of view. So it's a light telephoto, which is great for portraits. It's wonderful for that. It will work just fine. But the angle of view might be too little to get a kind of a meaningful coverage of what you're wanting to shoot. So you will find stepping backwards often just to get enough in the frame. As long as you shoot mostly outdoors, that shouldn't be too big of a problem. But it's indoors is going to be a problem. Even though the 50 millimeters are very, very bright lenses. So 1.8, 1.4. It's going to give you a lot of light to shoot with. You won't need a flash there. Now, that was the 50 on a crop sensor, light telephoto. The 35 on a crop sensor, that's where I would start feeling kind of it would start to feel kind of normal to me, because that is pretty much the normal focal length. The angle of view of the 35 on your crop sensor is comparable to the angle of view of the 50 millimeter on a full frame. And that for me is more of an always-on kind of lens. So the 35, I know the 50s are usually cheaper, but the 35 on a crop sensor, that could be an always-on lens. That could be an always-with-you lens. It doesn't weigh much. It does. If it's a prime lens, they're usually quite bright. They let a lot of light in. They have a similar angle of view. The only difference is the 35 on the crop versus the 50 on the full frame is that the 50 on the full frame will give you less depth of field, because 50 millimeters gives you less depth of field. It's easier to throw the background out of focus, but the difference is not too dramatic. So it's not like a difference between the depth of field on your smartphone camera versus the depth of field on full frame SLR. No, it's not as dramatic. So I will personally go to the 35. If I have to choose for a lens to always have with me, I will, and I don't do too much portraiture, I will go for the 35 on a crop sensor. Maybe I'll personally even go a bit lower because I love wide angle so much. And on my crop camera, that's why I often have the 24 millimeter prime on there when I'm just out and about doing some snapshots, because the angle of view is similar to like a 40 millimeter on a full frame, and that's just, it covers more and it feels right for me. But in the end, if you're not sure, you can get a cheap used 50 millimeter 1.8 to get started and to just try it out. You'll probably get a used one for under $50, I would think. And that would be a good starting point for you to, well, experiment to see if that works for you. And if it doesn't, then you didn't lose too much money, or you can even sell it on eBay and try the 35. But yeah, I would personally be in the 35 millimeter camp. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thanks again for your support. And if you want to help keep TFTTF going, I'd appreciate it if you had a look at tfttf.com/support. If you want me to go, you better let me know. I remember that. And of course, thanks to Udemy for supporting this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Also, don't forget to check out the Lofoten tours from the ship, February 2019. Link is in the show notes. And of course, I'm looking forward to your voicemails. Another Q&A episode is definitely in the future. And I love getting your questions and feedback and your tips and anecdotes. You know the drill. Record something on your smartphone, send it to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. I'll make you sound good. I want to hear from you. I feel like deep, you know, in the heart of your soul, that I- Music for the show by Jeff Smith, sound partner Hans Pedagogic Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rapsodar Armstead, Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. I'm Chris Mockwart. Go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other, and happy shooting.